Okay, so welcome to Israeli Election Day. Mazel tov. It's Israel's once a year Sunday. I figured. It's a legal holiday. Correct. What? Or multiple times a year. Correct. Sometimes it's our five times a year party, but our Sunday. But yes. Okay, so before we go to these sources, I'll quickly share a tshuva with you, a short tshuva by Rav Stav. Rav Stav has a nice little tshuva on Ha'im Yesh Mitzvah Lehatzbiya B'Bchirot. Right? Is there a mitzvah to vote in Israel? In his tshuva, he notes that first of all, before we even get to the halacha, he thinks that it's a privilege. You know, it's a privilege that after 2,000 years to have some. You know, to have a self-governing Jewish state, and therefore voting in is a privilege. But then he suggests a few potential halachic models as to why he thinks there might actually be halachic value in it. One, interestingly, he claims is hashavat avida. Why would it be hashavat avida? Right, returning you know lost property. So he notes that Rabbeinu Yonah expands hashavat avida. So he says, "Va'amar Shlomo, it repeated b'yom tzara tzar kolcha perush im yezal koch latzil beitzav ishtadlut v'atamar nevshcha shein b'chay yicholet shkolcha midah gonna get midah." Right? Included in this is that if you have the ability to give good advice, and you don't, you violate it. Right? He says that if you have, right? So Rabbeinu Yonah expands it, right? And says that part of it is that you can help people, you know, on the right path and things like that. So you think that's true. So if you think that you have something to add to the conversation, so then he thinks that. You know, voting in a way that's, effective and the like is, at some level, some extension of Hashavat Avedah. He also thinks that potentially Tochacha, right, the mitzvah to rebuke, right, that we're obligated to make sure that other people do the right thing. And therefore he says, yeah, well, you know, voting in people who are going to try to have better policies, you know, that encapsulate your values, it might be a value, you know, value of Tochacha. His third potential model is Kiddush Hashem. Again, these are very sort of generic, right? But obviously everyone's supposed to, sanctify God's name. Therefore voting the right people will make the right, express the right values. Now, of course, it's going to be the obvious. And then he says, you know, potentially, and this comes down to, piece of Rav Kook, right, where Rav Kook, argues that he doesn't mention explicitly, Rav Kook, as I mentioned, we were doing Hilchot Malachim, argues that, the mitzvah to appoint a king doesn't necessarily require a king. Right, it could be any form of government, and that's why Rav Kook thinks that a democratically elected government that's chosen by the people can encapsulate the power of Malchut without Melech, right, of a monarchy without a king. I mean, if that's the case, then setting up or being involved in the establishment of any government system might be at some level Malchut. So again, now he says, right, these are some halachic models. He just, he's a big adol, right, he doesn't really need proof. He just thinks that, you know, it's a valuable thing, and it's, you know, hakar dato for having a state. But with that as a little introduction, let's talk about the question that Shlomo asked me about, which was women's placement. And normally, people talk about women being in leadership, but the truth is that the big machloka that exploded, if you want to know a little bit of Zionist history, is the issue not of women in power, but women voting. And as we're going to see, I would like you to keep an open mind here, because what you're going to see is that, well, if you are honest, you might be a little bit surprised by who holds what in this conversation. We're going to see. But, you know, if I told you that this was a major machloket about 100 years ago, and I told you that there was a posek who said that it's usher for women to vote and it is proof of the incursion of foreign values in corrupting Judaism, that you would even talk about such things, what name would you put on said posek? What, who would you guess would say something like that? Pick a type of a name. What? 100 years ago. 100 years ago. Right, very good. You'd guess, the Sadma Rebbe, whatever. It's Rav Kook. That's right. You would not guess Rav Kook, but it would be Rav Kook. And it does. But what, I mean, maybe it doesn't surprise you. He did say it. So, well, let's see. So the main sources are, as we saw when we were doing Hilchot Malachim, the question of women's leadership. But we'll see that voting is a little bit complicated that way. So what's the source for the limitations at all in women's leadership? So That is from the following. The pasuk says, "Som tasim alecha melech asher yivchar Adonai alecha bo mikarav achecha tasim alecha melech lo tuchal alecha letir alecha ish nachrei asher lo achicha hu." So you shall place a king on you that God will choose from among your brothers. Right, you can't put a non-Jew. And the Sifrei famously said, "Melech velo malka." It has to be a king and not a queen. And now the Gemara further limits it, right? Not non-Jews. Mikarav achecha. Kol mizavush ad amazim lo yeh ela mikarav achecha. Yes, I just said that. We did this in Rambam Yomi when we were doing Yalchum Halachim. Now, interestingly, so in the Gemara assumes that there are two limitations in this pasuk, right? One is king and not queen. The other is Jew, not non-Jew. By new Jew and non-Jew, the Gemara expands the limitation to all forms of leadership. That all forms of leadership are limited. Jewish leadership is limited to Jews. However, the Gemara does not expand the limitation from king to queen, king and not queen, to all leadership positions. However, in some of the Midrashei Halacha, we do have that expansion. So, for example, I gave you the Midrash HaNoyim here, number 4. Shom tasim alecha melech velo malka, a king and not a queen, melamed she'ein ma'amidin isha b'malchut, chen kol mezimot v'Yisrael, ein ma'amidin elo ish. That not only should you not have a queen, you can't have, in any leadership, a woman. And as we saw in Rambam Yomi, that is famously the position of the Rambam. That ein ma'amid, the Rambam says in Aleph, hey, noch malachim, the ein ma'amidin isha b'malchut, shenemar alecha melech velo malka, and the Radbaz knows that this is found in the Midrash Tanoim, the Sifrei, Melech Velo Malka, Shivchar Hashem Elokecha Bal Pinavi. And then what's the obvious question that we've seen before? Is, okay, well, if women are excluded from all forms of leadership, so if it's a king and not a queen, so fine, we don't have any evidence of a Jewish queen that was supported necessarily by Chazal. I mean, maybe we do, but no, less obvious. But in Tanakh, we have evidence of a woman leader, namely, Dvorah. So if you're going to take the Sifrei's expansion and the Rambam's expansions, you have to explain Dvorah. So the Radbaz says, "Vim tomer v'aktiv v'dvorah eisha isha nivyai shoftat Yisrael." So he gives two answers. One is lo kasha shaita milamedet lema mishpatim. Possibility one is she wasn't a leader; she was a teacher. She taught halacha; she didn't lead. Right now, according to that first daya, what do you learn? That even within the Rambam, the prohibition is on one of power, right? Authority, right? Not necessarily a public position, but simply a position of power. His second answer is Inami Apia Dibraya, or maybe she was a leader, but God made an exception. And you know, God's allowed to do that. He maintains that prerogative. Tosfot, however, says, the Eishlomer, the Idiparak Basimen, Be'ish ayari klomer kol isha kasher lo adun kasher lo. In the context of talking about dayanut, he says that the Gemara says that anyone who's pasul to judge is pasul to testify. So he says, women can't testify, but how could Dvara therefore be a judge? Right? Aren't these two linked? So he says, D'shemayim mekablen otal layem mishum shechina. He said, yeah, well, maybe they accepted her, right? Maybe because God said so. Though in another possibility, he says maybe she really is kosher. Now, Tosfot seems less committed to the idea that women are apostle from all forms of leadership. Why? Because he has a local explanation, a local problem, which is dayanut. Right? Is that dayanut seems to be linked to edut, that being a judge is linked to testimony. And testimony, we know that the Gemara assumes that women can't testify. But he never brings up the possibility that she shouldn't have judged because it's a position of authority. It's simply because she's a judge. So as we mentioned, again, we did this in Rambam Yomi. So famously, Moshe Feinstein weighed in on this and said, what do you learn from Tosfot? Exactly what he just said, that Tosfot disagrees with the Rambam. And he doesn't think that lahalacha, women are banned from positions of leadership. He was asked this in the context of a woman who wanted to be a mashkicha. I wanted to be a mashkicha kashrut.
Well, that's not even a Well, he thinks it is. So he says, "Oh, binyan shalit manot dashkacha." Vatan binyan mamash. Mash gevir ramban rashbarish for savir ramam shilu kol mesima psulo nechim lo niskers at the brand el dehuk shalu al dvar rashay the meneged kedin malka. He said the ramban the rashba when they ask about divorce because maybe she was like a queen, but that would be different. Okay, and then he brings all the answers, right, and then he notes that they. Etc. What does he learn from all this? The fact that people ask about other questions about Diana. So if you look at his second to left line, he says, "Sof davar shehav rishonim zorim karamam." He said, "There are many rishonim who hold like the Rambam. It's true that women are excluded from all positions of leadership." La lacha. But Rashi mitos v'ra rosh v'ran v'ramban plige. He says, "Look at all these rishonim who never asked that question. They when they talk about divorce, it's a technical problem." Umistaver shekins v'gam rashba v'ata l'maizi yishlach v'chid the Rambam. Man gave him the book to the Ravazi. He said, "Listen, Lamaisa, maybe you should be machmir like the Rambam, but he's Ikaron." He assumes that the majority of Rishonim disagree with the Rambam, and that's why in this case he actually is Mekil. He actually allowed the woman to be a Mashkiach. Now, it was a very specific case where the woman's husband was a Mashkiach, and that this was how the family made money, and then the husband died. So Ramosha says, well, in this case, we make it, and he had all types of qualifiers, but he, right, but Ramosha does, right, that lahalocha, he thinks that the Rambam is not muska. Whether, maybe you should be machmir like that, but, fine. Now, another piece of evidence in this sugya is the following. The Gemara in Brachot is talking about a completely different halacha. And that is, are women chayav in benching? Now, what's the discussion here? No, I mean, that is a discussion. Very good, right? So the Gemara has the following. So Amar Le Rabbi Zera Le Rav Chisda Neiti Marvin Itne. Come, let's teach Mishnah. Amar Le Birkat Mizona Lo Gemirna V'Tanoi Matneita. Right, I haven't even learned at a bench. How can I teach Mishnah? Amar Le Maihai. He said, "What are you talking about? You don't need a bench." Amar Le. He said, "Listen, this is what I mean. The Ikla Veresh Galut. I visited the house of the Exlar. Ubrichad Bircha Mizona. They were benching." Zakvi Rav Sheshet Lekue Allah Kechivya. And Rav Sheshet, his neck stiffened like a snake, and he got angry at me. Vamai, why did he get so angry at me? Delo Amrit, lo Brit, lo Torah, lo Malchut. Because I left out the key themes. Covenant, Torah, and Malchut. Vamai lo Amart. So he says, well, why didn't you say this? Right? Why didn't you mention these key themes? Because Rav Chananel says in the name of Rav that if you don't say these things, you're still Yotzei. Brit, lefi she'ena binashim. Brit, how does he know that Brit is not essential? Because he says women have to bench, but women aren't shayach in the Brit Milah, because you know, obvious. Yes? Torah umalchut. What about Torah and Malchut? Lefi she'enan lo v'nashim v'lo v'avadim. Because they don't apply, the Chiyuv Talmud Torah and the positive of Malchut don't apply to women or slaves. Va'at shavachta called Hanei Tanoi v'orai v'adkar. I mean, he's what? Why'd you abandon all of the other poskim and go like Rav? Okay, fine. Without getting too far into the benching thing, what everyone notes is, wait, what does this mean? Right. What does it mean? So if you look at Marcheshet says as follows: Emen Nira, the Shalosh Mitzvot in the Tzavon Yeshua B'Knisat and Laretz Kedita B'Sanhedrin Daf Yotet Hakaman Melachum Melchemen Amalek Minim Edavachir. There were three mitzvot that the Jews were commanded in when they came to Eretz Yisrael. Kulan, namely having a king, destroying Amalek, building a Beit Hamikdash. Kulan in Oged Ben Hashem. None of them apply to women. Mishum Shekol Eloin Mitzvot VeChovot Midiniyot. These are political obligations. And therefore, I think that the appointing of kings doesn't apply to women. Right? So this is why it's relevant. Because, right, what some of the poskim say is this isn't just a limitation of women having positions of authority. It's a exclusion of them from the mitzvah of involvement in having a king, in initiating a political system. He said, this can't be merely that a woman can't be a king, which we already know. He was afraid of Paskar Rambamzal. The Melech v'lo Malka, Shim Kain, Ma'aitam Alash of Gam Kain, Eina Bigerim, Ketachim Ekar V'achecha, Kmochen Kohanim. Because if that's what it meant, if what it meant was, in order to be Chayiv in benching, you have to be able to be a king, well then, Gerim, it can't, you wouldn't have to bench. Kohanim, wouldn't have to bench. Levim, wouldn't have to bench, because none of them can be kings. And therefore, the Marcheshet says, it could be that this is actually more expansive. Namely, that women aren't just excluded from political power, from holding the power of king, queen, monarch, there we go. They are excluded from the mitzvah to have a political system. And it doesn't even make sense. What, she can't daven about having a king?
Just because she can't be a king.
Mazeh. So there we say, it must be she must not even be involved in the mitzvah of establishing a king. So now, right, so these are the two basic sugyot you need to have in your, you know, in your back pocket. Okay? Now, before we look at the sources, tell me methodologically how you would approach the question of whether women should vote in a democratic government. What would you do?
According to
methodologically, I went broad.
Well, first, before we address whether or not women should vote, we should address whether or not it's proper to vote with Trump.
Sure.
Right? Well, if we establish that it's proper to vote with Trump, and understand some paradigm under which there's an ending to do so, then we need to analyze woman's placement within the political.
So we need to do two things, right? So the first thing, so the first thing you could do is have a very localized halachic discussion, right? The second thing you could do is have a broader value discussion. Now, that broader discussion may entail, as Shlomo notes, questions of democracy and whether democracy is proper. It may include discussions of women's role in democracy, women's role in leadership, women's role in society, right? So right off the bat, when I say should women vote, right, you can mean very two different things by that. One is narrow this question as much as you can or broaden it as much as you can. The next question you can do is, okay, well, if it's, let's say it's broader, let's say you don't have halachic a direct halachic parallel. So then you also have two choices. One is to say, well, if it's not usser, then it's mutter. If I can't prove that it's usser, what's the other one? To be much more open to being medama milta la milta, right? Expanding principles to non-exact parallels, right? To have a broader discussion. Now, there's also gonna be, as we see, what happens when you assume, possibly correctly, that a move is being made because of external motivation? Well, these tshuvot came up in the beginning of in 1918. Why is it going to 1918? Because women's suffrage was becoming a thing, right? So there's no denying that it's being that the discussion is being is becoming relevant amongst halachic minded people because it's a broader, because of discussion in general. Now, methodologically, how do you react to something only becoming a discussion because it is a discussion amongst non-Jews? Well, no, there could be two. There are two opposite. Again, I want to talk broadly, right? One possibility is to say, well, if it comes from outside, then default bad. The other possibility is, yeah, so either, right, either it's, if it's coming from outside, it's usser unless proven otherwise, or bad idea. The other possibility is no, just because something comes from outside doesn't mean that it's automatically usser and it's default mutter, right, or good, right? Or the third possibility, Right, right, or default nothing. The third possibility is, yeah, default nothing, which is, okay, I'm not going to, because it comes from outside, I'm not going to give it a bias in favor or against. I'm just going to say, it doesn't matter where it comes from, I have to judge it on its own terms. Right, these are all possibilities, and I will just briefly throw out that you should realize that those basic moves are carried out pretty much whenever there's anything new and controversial. Right, that there are the post-game who their tendency is to localize the discussion to a very technical halachic point. There are those who expand it. There are those who are automatically hesitant of anything that comes from outside. And there are those who are automatically biased, unless they know otherwise, to take things from outside. And those who are neutral and say, listen, just because something comes from outside the Torah system doesn't mean you can't just judge it on its own terms. And sometimes you'll turn out to be in line with Torah values and sometimes it won't. Right, these are general tools and tendencies. Well, either you make it us or no. Oh, okay, good. And then there's the question that then Michael says, well, what if it's not in line with their values, but we don't have a formal isser? So some poskim will say it's usser, and some will say, well, some people will say it's usser even though they don't mean it, and sometimes people will say, it's a, yeah, some poskim are much more comfortable with the language of, well, maybe it's not technically usser, but you know, Pasnished. It's Pasnished. Sure, Makabada. Sure. So what I want to do is walk you through a few models here of what people said. And like I said, I think it's actually very telling of the way people engage with new issues in general. I would say that new issues in general, not lav dafka feminism, but no, like the exact same models you will find here, you will find in pretty much any feminist discussion that touches on feminism. It doesn't matter what the edge is, you'll have the same polls, right? The people who assume it's usher or terrible or heretical, the people will say, why? Just because it comes from outside, you know, it's about equality, it's fine, you know, unless it comes up against an isser. The same tendencies you'll find across the board. So let's start with the start at one extreme. Rav Kook in this machloket was a very, very extreme position, where not only did he end up saying that it's usher, but he took the approach, in this case at least, of the value motivating discussion comes from outside of Torah, therefore it is suspect, and therefore even if I could be matir it, I most certainly will not. What? So Rav Kook says as follows. Ka'az kein ata mukhani lomar. I'm forced to say. Sharabanim showed you at a sur mitzad adin. Ad ko shoavu adatam mikor hakola echad shen shomim and atram enivim ktuvim. Those who have so far said it's usher, they have drawn their opinion from the unified voice that emerges from the Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, Halacha, Haggadah, Hamoreh, all of Torah ever teaches. Shemoreh, Sheruach Oma, Kula, B'Tzivyonah, V'Taroh, who shows that the spirit of the nation in its flavor, its purity, Omeid Hu Neged HaChidush HaModerni Hazeh, stand against this modern invention. Then anu matim ratzmenu kan dafka litchunat amusar iri achadish. And if we were to turn ourselves specifically to the morality, this new morality, hare anu osim bazem ase bigida v'yachad lemusarenu anu, we would be committing treason against our tradition, Musar HaYadu, the tradition of Torah, or the ethics of Torah, Ma Shemevi L'Nabek Eruach HaMal Arid L'Aretz Tzar Shel Tchiyah HaLumit, which would basically crush our spirit and any hope of national revival. Tov Reish Pei, it's like 1920 or so. 1920 or so. The Im Anu Nevi'im, and if we are prophets, if we're not prophets, b'nei Nevi'im anachnu, we are still the sons of prophets. V'anu chayavim likro b'kol gadol, we have to scream in a loud voice. L'kol achinu chavetzim ka'et b'tzu. With all the people who have any hope of renewing the Jewish spirit, they should hold on to our spirit and not eat this unripe fruit, which will destroy our teeth. It's a mashal, right? That you eat both there and it destroys your teeth. Which we would have to regret very much. We think that our perspective on social issues is purer of Yoter Tahor, Me'abed Shal Amea Tarbut, Hazmanim Bechal. More, it's purer than all these cultures. Hamishbecha Shalanu Hilanu Kidusha Bitsurar Beyotar Muka. Our families are holier. Oh my God, this hiccup is not going away.
Isn't he trying to say that the family itself is like a concept?
Yes. Our family is holier than it is in the modern world. And is the secret of the honor and happiness of women and Jewish people. Other nations, the family isn't the foundation. It's not that established, not that deep, like it is among us. Because of that, and therefore they won't suffer as much if they destroy the family, because the family doesn't matter to them. This desire to publicly declare the rights of women, it comes because women are so disgraced among the other nations. They have no respect for their women. If their families and their women were as dignified and respected as they are by the Jews, then the women themselves and the ethicists and the idealists, no one would care about rights of women voting, because they would realize that it will destroy Shalom Bayit, peace in the family. And destroy society at large. But because of their bitterness and their giving up all hope, these people, these arrogant people, come to destroy the families. They're using public force. We will not descend to their level. We refuse to look at women this low, that they need to be redeemed by giving them rights. I'm just reading you what it says. I don't know what you want to read. Habayit etzleinu gamata machon kodesh. Our houses are Beit HaMikdash. V'chalinu lan lashbit et zohar shalchai achotenu. We should not extinguish the light of our sisters' lives. In makom limareru tam ayideh hamachalot hadeot hamachalot. V'kotan v'nenei habichirot. We don't want to make their lives bitter by making them have to vote and think about politics. Jewish women, they enjoy, you know, the purity of spirit. Laws, etc. And if you, I mean, you can keep reading this. Right, he goes on and yells at the rabbis who are in favor of this. he bashes England, right? He says, look what happened to them after they introduced this. I'm just going to skip down a little bit here. And he says, "Vafilu mayat tzedek imela omrim shatochem shel musar adoresh grim shivui zchuyot shel nashim from the ziburit al pinuzach hamedini moderni udavar naimet kabal." And even if they were right that it would be nice ethically to give women equality, we still wouldn't accept it based on our values. Every nation has to judge the good and the bad, the beautiful and the disgusting, based on its own values. We have to build our life based on our values. And this argument should enter all straight souls. We want to really build the nation. So I now need all the rabbis to say, we just shouldn't be involved with this. We have to join together to know that, to say the Jewish voice, and then we'll have hope, etc., etc., etc. What is Rav Kook's approach here? Okay, yes, bad. But let's be more specific. What is his methodological assumption? Very good, right? Is that he is totally comfortable saying that it doesn't matter whether it's a halachic thing. If something comes from outside, that makes it suspect. And in this case, does he provide halachic proof? No, right? He says, like, equality, this is fake equality, right? We don't believe in equality in that way. We think that women should, you know, not be involved in politics. They have a different type of a soul. You're trying to destroy all that is holy. But you see certain tendencies. A comfort with non-halachic argumentation, right? Right? And if anything, it seems to me that he thinks non-halachic argumentation is stronger than halachic argumentation, right? For him, this is not just like a machloket. It's, you know, fundamental. A basic conviction that that new values are suspect, which leads him to this very, very strident opposition to women's involvement in politics without any particular source.
This makes me wonder how we justify democracy.
It makes you wonder a lot of things. As I mentioned to someone before, very surprisingly, Nechama Leibovich, who was like, you know, the preeminent female teacher of like the century, didn't vote till the day she died out of deference to Rav Kook, which is a fun historical tidbit. No, definitely not. He's talking about no, for sure not. Now, what's the problem? Now, let's say you are a As you probably know, much of the religious Zionist world traces itself back to Rav Kook. So what's the problem? Very good. So what's the problem if you trace it back? So you either have to say, okay, here we disagree with Rav Kook, or you can agree with Rav Kook, but then you would, you know, women wouldn't vote. So here, if you look, for example, Ryako Ariel, number 12, he says, Rav Kook ra'a b'kach pritzut geder. Yagoriel says maybe that was only Rav Kook's time, but now people vote from tzniut and dafka women's sensitivity that they want to choose. They vote for the proper values. Oh, even Rav Kook would have agreed nowadays that women could vote. Now, what? So either you could, now, obviously at some level it sounds like counter-read to Rav Kook. Now, at some, level, though, you could say, listen, it could be that what Rav Kook was bothered by was the change. But once the change is set in, right? Now, that doesn't seem to be true in Rav Kook, but you could, right? Remember, you always have to wonder, are people bothered by the change or the fact that there is change? So one possibility is, say, he's more bothered by the fact that people are trying to change it, in which case, once it becomes the norm, you would change. The other possibility is clearly Rav Yaakov Ariel, even though he sees himself as someone as Rav Kook, thinks that what? That this meta-analysis is not right, meaning he's totally comfortable with meta-analysis, right? Not halachic argumentation. He just thinks that in the current context, it's good. Now, you know, I don't want to get, you know, obviously you can get into, well, you know, is it because he doesn't want religious people to not have any power because, you know, we would have half the voting rights? And is it necessity? We'll see that some Haredim will make that argument explicitly. But you see that Rav Yaakov Ariel is comfortable with the values type of discussion. He just, you know, reinterprets Rav Kook / makes a claim that it is not opposed to the ethics. And the Mizrahi movement, at the time when Rav Kook was writing this, was quite clear on the fact that on a value level, they did not agree with Rav Kook. They said, a Mizrahi b'toris derud olamit, b'chol hakavod v'yakar shu rochesh l'rabbanut, with all due respect that it has for rabbis, and for all the authority it wants to grant people, we should tell you that all the rabbis that we asked said it's fine. So, yes.
From the Eastern Bloc, in which democracy is very much not, were these speakers not coming out in like the tens of voters?
Yeah, so?
What?
So?
I haven't lost my mind.
What's your point?
The Eastern Bloc, in which democracy was very much not a thing, or from Germany.
Votes, was it? Voting was a thing?
In the Eastern Bloc? I mean, not really. The Soviet, before the Soviet.
What are you talking about?
Before the Soviet. Soviet Union started during World War I.
I haven't completely lost my mind, have I?
What are you talking about? There were elections in Russia also at that time.
Yeah, but when everything was controlled by...
What are you talking about? The Soviet Union also had votes. What are you talking about? There were votes. There were elections. Yes. I'm sorry. When did Russia get women's suffrage? No, 1917. Right here. There were votes. You can start saying it's not a real vote. It's not a real... There were votes. Now, the Shri Deish takes a much more halachic view. and he notes, he quotes Rav Tzvi Hoffman, who says, listen, we have to distinguish. There's a halachic question, which is Srara. And he said, Rav Tzvi Hoffman hitiret abechira ha'aktivit. Rav Tzvi Hoffman thought that active choice was mutter. And passive choice was aser. Now you look at me like I'm crazy, but I can say that in normal English, which is voting was mutter and being voted in was aser. Because David Zvi Hoffman said holding a position of leadership was a violation of Sara. Voting for someone else to be in charge, leadership, right? And then he notes, Ulam Rabbeinu Eretz Yisrael, V'chein Baal HaChavetz Chaim, Agon Ruchaim Ozer, but he noted that there were many poskim who thought that no, under Srara, voting was also Asur. Why? What would the logic be? So either something like the Marcheshet, right, that they're excluded from politics, or voting is an act of asserting power. And if you poskim like the Rambam, you could expand it. Yep. So Rav Kook doesn't know. You don't know if he says it's really usher. So the Shri Deish says there were clearly poskim who felt it was. There were some who felt it was usher to vote. No, sorry. mutter to vote, but usher to actually leave. He says, "Varaba Rashi Rabuziel b'sifromish Rabuziel mater mechilat chor uli b'acher gam yachad." Rabuziel said it was mutter to vote and to lead. Right? V'lamalid koed atzmi b'makom machok jozrim matirim. Now, remember, I said that in addition to the halachic question here, there's the question of, do you think this is a huge values question? So, what would a how would you know that someone doesn't think this is an ideologically loaded question? Either answer it halachically, or what he does, which is, why should I even get involved? It's a machloket poskim. Time will tell. Right? What does that show you by the Sweet Asia's position? He's like, listen, it's a machloket. I'm like, I don't have to get involved. Which means that A, he thinks it's halachic, and B, what does he think? Correct. And this doesn't need to be some huge meta thing. Because if it's a huge meta thing, you probably should have an opinion.
But this is completely dependent on the time.
So he says, look, he says, those who say to Asar have a ethical reason. It's against sniut that a woman should be involved in sibur. And they quote Melech Olomalka. So he said, the people of Asar alternate between halachic positions and meta positions. And he says, V'yesh l'dchot l'falpel, but I can negate it, and I can make several sides of chilukim. But there's no reason for me to go into Svara, because there's deeper reasons. Meaning, I hear you, you have halachic opposition, you have ethical oppositions. Okay. Good for you. Right, so you see different approaches, right? You see those who say it's usher, those who say it's mutter, those who are convinced that it's a meta question, those who think it's doesn't need to be. Right? Rav Kook clearly said this is a meta question. The Sweet Age assumes it's a halachic question. He said there are those who are also, those who are mutter, and there are those who think it's a meta question. I think, Malki Bakodesh, who was an interesting rabbi who was, whether he should be called Orthodox is not quite clear. Rav Avadya would tell you very much not. He was a very serious Talmud Chacham, clearly. He was the rabbi of the very holy city of Hoboken. Yes, he was the rabbi of Hoboken. What? It's a city. It's a city in New Jersey. Yes. And he wrote many, 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 many volumes. He's clearly a very big Talmud Chacham. I'm running out of time. But he said, he quotes Rav Kook. And he says, let me just try to get his key. He argues that not only is Rav Kook wrong because of the meta, he agrees with Rav Kook there's a meta question. What does he disagree with? Yeah, exactly. He says, you see what matzav ha akinosti umitivan matzav amusari belti mefutach. He says the fact that men used to have power over women in the ancient times was because they were unethical. Nikuda, unethical. V'efshalom was really dad, right? Because and he argues that it was because they were unethical, and he says the Torah believes in equality, and therefore he says if you want to go on values, right? He says no, right? It would be worse for us to not give it to them because then we would be falling into the unethical claim that women aren't equal. Right? So he takes Rav Kook up and the value thing and he says, but you're wrong. Right? The equality is... and he says it's dafka kiyum in the mishpacha. Right? And again, I'm running out of time, but you can see right? Because this is always the question, right? Is when something is clearly a meta question, just because it's influenced by the outside, sort of Cook assumes, well, it must be an external value. And the Malki Bakodesh said, well, just because it was motivated by outside doesn't mean that it's bad. In fact, if anything, it's good. Very good. It's good. Now, if you look at Yisrael Mintzberg, he responded to Rivershitzin, and his very succinct summary of it was, you were legaviv kolot la'atir yisurim, you gathered kulot in order to forbid the usser. Right? So there are those who say, no, right? You're just wrong. Now again, it's actually a very beautiful piece. If I wasn't running out of time, I would read the piece in the Malki Bakodesh. Develops the other view. If you look at Rav Uziel as well, Rav Uziel also takes this approach. And he says, I'll run through it quickly. He says, first of all, Al Rishona Lo Matzanu Shum, in terms of voting, he says, Lo Matzanu Shum Eser Barur Lasser. I have no reason to believe it's Aser. And A, it's Mutter. And B, in terms of the meta value, Ve'ein Hadan Mikabel L'Shalman Eser Chodi. She'd zot. Says, and it doesn't make any sense to take away this right from women. So what is Ruziel clearly saying? You're wrong halachically and ethically. He said, you're giving people the power to speak on our behalf? So there in the tell me simar to impose tax of initiative, Mederach Yashar, Mederach Yashar, Mekablor Lehim Aradon Shachar Meila. And one way or the other, the women have to accept their conclusion. So he says, how could you make them listen without giving them the choice? No taxation without representation? He says, what is this? He says, you're wrong halachically and you're wrong value-wise. It's just unethical. And maybe you'll tell them, Daitan Kalot, that they are not smart enough. We will say, okay, so you think we should stop stupid people from voting?
Yeah.
He's like, Yecholia. Yecholia. And then he says, next paragraph, Pritzot? He says, you think it's Pritzot? It's not Sanua? He's a Pritzot, Yecholia, but never said. It's like, what Pritzot? He's like, you go to the voting booth behind a curtain and you put a piece of paper in a box. Pritzot, Gzeir, or Elite to mixed dancing. He's like, what are you out of your mind? He's like, what are you talking about? He says, what? He's like, what is this? He's like, and he says, we already have problems with, you know, that women might, he says, Chazal were worried of Eva between, that a wife might hate her husband, depending on the rights that you give them. Well, he's like, I reach out to my midstarim. We have enough problem with the other inequalities between men and women. You want to add new ones? He's like, well, what is this? And then he says, he quotes a writer who said, well, they're not a kahal. And he's like, what? What does that have to do with anything? And therefore he thinks that it is mutter and it's in line with their values. Then there's the pragmatic argument that Yaakov Ariel said, which is, look, you may not like it, but what's the alternative? That religious people should have half the representation in the Israeli government than everyone else? That's an expression of Torah values. It's also a pragmatic argument, but... and he notes, Rav Malamud notes, that it's true, that Rav Kook made sure not to say it was us, or he never said that, right? He made it a values question. Now he said, okay, well, if it's a values question... Yeah, he's willing to actually say that maybe Rav Kook made a mistake. Right? And he knows there were other poskim who said it wasn't true. Okay, so just to summarize, again, there are other shitot. But basically, I think this is a very interesting case, right? Because what you see is, when you have a thing like this, you have different approaches. There are those who take this as a pure halachic discussion, there are those who take it as ashkafic discussion, and there are those who say, okay, well, if it's ashkafic discussion, does that mean we should be questioning it? Or is it, we should say, maybe value, you know, on a value level, what seems like an external value is, in fact, a Torah value. You also see the people who change over time, either because the Ritziot changed or because there's pragmatism that comes in. The halachigish that people brought in, obviously, were Srara, both on voting and being voted in. The question of maybe they're excluded from politics, the Marcheshet. But again, I think it's a nice, it's an interesting microcosm into the types of approaches that people have whenever you have a new issue, right? Those who decide that the best way to attack it is halachically, those who say that you have to take it broadly, and even when broad, those who say that if something comes from, again, from outside source, it must be bad, and those who say no, not anything comes from outside is bad. Sometimes it's good. And in this particular case, again, you had the issue basically says it's halachic. There are those who say it's mutter, those who say it's aser. I don't need to weigh in. You have Rav Uziel who says it's mutter, halachically, and it's in line with Torah values at Malkei Kodesh. You have Rav Kook who says it might be mutter, but it's against Torah values. Right? Those who say it's formally aser, either to vote or to be in power. Rav Uziel is mater, both women having positions of power and voting. And then you have the pragmatists who say, listen, maybe it's not the most mutter, but A, things might change. And there may be pragmatic reasons where you have to say that maybe it's not ideal, but you still do it, right? These are all approaches. Again, I think in the community this way, in the whole community, from the, you know, Dati Leumi to the Haredi community, there's basically no significant community who doesn't think women should vote. Whether that's because they think it's mutter or a good idea or practically necessary, you'll get different voices. But again, it's also interesting that you'll say that you might be surprised by who says what, right? The fact that Rav Kook is like the most, forceful voice against it, right, is I think, for many people, surprising. I'm a little bit over time. There's obviously a lot more here, but this is a little bit, at least a taste of a sugya on elections for election.